It's that time again. If you're a real estate agent and you're looking to finally build a business that creates consistent cash flow, but you're concerned about all the market disruptions, relax. You found your safe haven to learn the secret to success. List, you last. Welcome to this week's podcast. Hey, welcome, fellow listing agents. Bob Mangold, the listing coach, here with episode number 23 of the If You List, You Last podcast. Now, this week, I'm going to talk to you about the process of why you need to pivot your business towards listings. I know you always hear that you should focus on listings. So today, I thought I'd give you some reasons on why you should actually do it so they have a better understanding of why this talk. Yes, outside of the NAR commission lawsuit, there's still really good reasons for you to build your business this way. So today, that's what we're going to talk about. Now, as always, make sure you join our Real Estate Asset Advisors Facebook group so that you can join in on the conversation and maybe share your thoughts, your comments, questions on any of the topics I discuss right here on the podcast. Also, if you have a topic or a conversation you want me to discuss on the show, go over to the Facebook group and share your request. So let's get started. This week, let's do our mortgage market update. Last week was a terrible week in the mortgage bond market, meaning it had a very negative impact on interest rates right now. This morning, I actually heard a good comment by a gentleman. His name is Ed Yardeni. He's a Wall Street analyst, very accurate gentleman. And he said, really, we need to stop talking about having higher interest rates. They're normal interest rates. This is where we're at is the norm for 50 years. Just because we had about 10 years of way crazy below market interest rates, this is really the average interest rate. So we really need to change our thought process about where interest rates are today. What makes it a little bit harder for people to buy the house is because of the cost of the real estate, right? But interest rates, by and large, are pretty much normal. Now, this week, we've got a lot of inflation information coming out, which, good or bad, is going to have an impact on the market even further. But hopefully you listened to last week's podcast on what clients should be looking for in a mortgage and ways to make sure that they protect themselves. But folks, again, I think we need to turn that conversation about interest rates into the interest dollars that they pay, because that's where everybody's making the huge financial mistake, is by worrying about what the note rate is. And so I just finished over the weekend doing a new buyer's presentation for our members and the agents in our group. And really, I wanted to take and make sure that they could have an intelligent conversation with people about why they should hire them and get paid a real estate commission. A lot of that is geared around the interest rates on a mortgage, right? And the savings that we can help them achieve by getting that thing paid off in 7 to 10 years. So as interest rate goes, I would tell you to stop thinking about that they're going to go lower. They're just normal interest rates right now. And that's 100% true. So as the data comes out this week, though, remember, from week to week or even month to month, you can see interest rates go up and down. And so that jobs report last week spooked the bond market. And when that happens, rates tend to rise. Now, here's the good or the bad news, right? I always tell you, you have to look below the surface at the numbers. And yes, they reported a large number of new jobs, but folks, the majority of them were part-time jobs. Now, there's nothing wrong with a part-time job, but what it really means is that we have people coming into the market because the cost of living is so high, inflation is so high, that they're really having to go out and get two jobs, because the number of two-job households or two-job individuals is going up substantially. And the reason for that is it's so darn expensive to live, right? That's where the inflation is coming from. Look at gas price. The national average now is just a shade under 360 is a national average. 2 months ago, it was 305. Every time somebody fills up their gas tank, folks, they realize how expensive it is to live, and it scares them away from buying a house. Now, if we could help them understand how they could offset some of those costs and use that to pay down the debt that they have, whether that's credit card, student loans, and mortgage, the more valuable we become, right? So we need to focus on talking to people about that And I'll be doing over the next couple of weeks a whole class on that whole buyer's agreement and things like that. So make sure you register for the ElevateBusinessBriefings.com classes. You'd go to ElevateBusinessBriefings.com and register for that. And I'm going to walk through what that'll look like in the next few weeks. Make sure that you're paying attention to interest rates, but really you got to change your mindset around it a little bit and say, hey, we're just at normal interest rates. That's it. So the mortgage market right now is spooked. You're seeing Bitcoin is going up. That's a hedge against inflation. So just pay attention to what's going on economically, because again, folks, you have to remember the consumer is now expecting you to be an expert in these arenas, especially if they're going to write you a check for your commission, right? So it's logical to think that you've got to be smarter and understand really every phase of our business. So don't blow off the mortgage side saying, hey, I just stay in my lane and I let somebody else be the expert. How about if you be the expert and then don't cede that expertise to a loan officer? Make sense? All right, so let's get into the reasons that you should be a listing agent, why we should pivot that way to be able to accomplish that. All right, so first and foremost, I want you to think about, as a real estate agent, are you the employee or are you the employer? Now, in most instances, for agents who work with buyers, they're the employee. And what does that mean? It means when I list a property, I actually am going out and making an offer of compensation to all the other agents out there, my employees, if you will. So one of the things that happens is that when you're the buyer's agent and you can't put a deal together, the seller doesn't want to budge on pricing or whatever that may be, it's really the buyer's agent who's invested their time and effort into trying to make this transaction close. And of course, the listing agent wants to close it. Otherwise, there's no compensation, right? But remember, folks, if your buyer isn't the one who buys it, they still have the listing. They're the employer. Every time you take a listing, you're the employer and not the employee. So we need to start to think about that. Am I working for other agents? And especially in today's day and age, with all this NAR compensation stuff going on, who's dictating what income you make? Is it the listing agents? Is it the seller? And is it the buyers? And the answer to all of that is yes, it's all three. Where do you get to come in on that? And the answer is you're going to have to show people why you're worth what you're worth to be able to get that. But if you have the listing, you prove your expertise on the listing and the marketing side of the market. And remember this, folks, how many hours does it take you to work with a buyer to get them under contract, close it, inspections, everything? If I'm being conservative, I'm going to say about 40 hours. On the listing side, from the time you fill out paperwork, meet with them, how long does it take you to actually close a transaction? Usually you have an assistant inputting into MLS and things like that. In Phoenix, where my son does business, he actually has a company for $150. They put it in MLS. They put up the sign. They put up the lockbox. They create videos for it. They go out and have professional photography done for $150. So every time he takes a new listing, he doesn't really have to spend any time in it. He spends $150 to get all that work done. All he's got to do is the open house, and we get that to the closing stage at that point. So he can work, call it 10 hours, 12 hours. So for every buyer that you're working with, you can work with about four listings and get paid four times instead of once. Make sense? So when you're the employer, the listing agent, you get to work Monday through Friday a little bit, working on building up your inventory. When you're the buyer's agent, you're working at the schedule of the buyer, your employee. You're the employee of the buyer, and you're an employee of the listing agent. So why don't we become the employer by having the listings? Make sense? All right, next, number two, it allows you to build market share. When you list a property, you have signs up, you do marketing, if you're doing calling, door knocking, whatever it is that you're doing, the more listings you can take in a specific area, the more recognition you get, right? So name recognition, brand recognition is a big deal. It's your face on the signs, on the riders, on the postcards that you send out, let's say, or the agents that are door knocking. When you do that, let's say that you can get three, four, five listings in a specific area, Now you're going to build that name recognition because remember, folks, people drive by those signs every day, see your name, and if you use your picture, name and picture. So one of the reasons I've always taught never to take overpriced listings, even though you go, yeah, I'll work them down and maybe we'll get lucky. But the number one reason I tell agents not to take overpriced listings is the recognition side of this. So imagine you take a 6-month listing and it doesn't sell. Every day, people are driving by that listing, seeing your name sitting there. Maybe now you've gotten a couple of price reductions, but the people in the neighborhood don't know that. They just see that the house hasn't sold. And now your listing expires. The new agent comes in, gets the lower price because now the seller understands that's what the market value is. And if I want to sell it, that's what I have to sell it. 2 weeks later, they have it under contract, right? So on the rider sign, under contract. What did that just say to all the neighbors that drove by your signs for the last 6 months? Oh my God, this guy doesn't or this gal doesn't know what she's doing because another agent came in there 2 weeks later, it's under contract. So when you're the listing agent, you have that name recognition. If you're the buyer's agent, does anybody in that neighborhood know who you are as the buyer's agent? So you have no ability through buyers to build brand and name recognition in a specific area. The other thing is when you're the listing agent, you're working in a specific area. It allows you to dictate where you want to work. But when you work with buyers, they could have you running all over the place and you don't really get the ability to become a name brand in that particular market. So when you list, it allows you to build much bigger name and value, name and brand recognition. But when you're the buyer's agent, folks, nobody's going to know who in the heck you are. Next, number three, it's going to give you a lot more credibility. See, when you can sell homes quickly, the more homes you list and sell, the more the people in the neighborhood see your name and see the results. That in itself, folks, give you credibility. You don't have to be bragging all over the place that I'm the number one this and I'm the number one that. They get to see the results. And so that's why if you've listened to all of the podcasts, and I don't remember which one I did this on, I talked about a zip code analysis that I have my agents do to dictate where they want to spend their time, effort, and marketing dollars because we're going to go where people are selling their homes. That makes sense? Because, hey, you could say I want to be the dominant agent in, let's say, this zip code or subdivision. But if only 3 or 4 homes a year sell in that subdivision, do you really want to be working there when there's very few transactions in that? Building credibility with your results by letting people over and over again see your sign, your name, and that the house sold, guess what? Now you've got credibility. The other thing is it also gives you a track record. So people who want to know your numbers, right? What's your list to sales price ratio and how many homes have you sold in the neighborhood? You have a lot more credibility when you're doing it in a specific area. Make sense? Number four, you're going to increase your referral business. Now, over the years, I found that more people refer people to us for listings than they do for buyers. Why is that? Hey, they may know people at work that got relocated, or they've got friends and relatives that are buying up or moving up, buying a bigger house, or maybe they're buying down, downsizing. But at the end of the day, we get more referrals on the listing side than we do on the buyer side. Can't give you a good reason why that is. It is. In our case, we have a very good mix of listing referrals to buyer referrals because of the value proposition that we have, right? So that we help you take and pay your home off in 7 to 10 years using the exact same money that every other realtor and lender is going to have you spend. And with the money you saved paying it to the bank, we're going to help you accumulate $1 million into your retirement fund. So that's a pretty compelling buyer side. So we do get a lot of referrals from buyers, but we still get more for listings than we do with buyers. And so if you want to build a referral-based business, make sure people know what you do to sell your property. Make sense? Number five, it's really from a business planning standpoint, allows you to take in draw out or plan your income. See, when you work with buyers, it could take 1 month, it could take 3 months, it could take 2 years before they actually find a house that they like, right? We've all been through that. There's people that we work with for a year because they can't make up their mind, right? But if you know that you're taking listings and you can take 2 to 3, 4 listings a month, 5 listings a month, it's easier for you to take and budget out your income. You have a much better idea of what's going on. Now, next week, I'm going to have Robert, our nomad listing agent out there traveling the country, who's still taking 2, 3, 4 listings every week from his Rockstar RV out there. He's not even in his market, yet he can anticipate what his income is going to be because he knows how many listings he's going to take. And the truth is, folks, we just sell all of our listings. If people aren't selling their listings, I think you need to take a look in the mirror and go, wow, my marketing plan isn't great, or I'm not working well with people on being able to take and price a home properly to sell, because it's still a great market. And at the end of the day, if you have listings and you know that you on average take, let's say, 2 to 3 listings a month. Now, you may have months where you take 5, 6, or 7, but you very rarely ever have a month where you take no listings if you're a listing specialist. So now it says, hey, my baseline income is based off of, let's say, 3 listings a month, whatever the commission is on that, whatever your splits are on that. It allows you to be able to budget yourself, anticipate what your income is going to be, anticipate what your cash flow is going to be. Because, folks, we're in a cash flow business, right? I would say that most agents, 80-90% of agents, make decisions on the marketing that they'll do for a client or the marketing they'll do for their business based on what their anticipated cash flow is. And because we're never really sure what the income is, we hesitate to do the things that we should do to get our name out there and to get more listings. When you take and focus on listings, you're going to have a much better idea of what your cash flow is going to look like. So making sure that you understand how to budget out your income, much easier to do when you're a listing agent than when you're a buyer's agent. Next, the sixth item, I call it 1 into 5. Every time we take a listing, our goal is that we pick up 5 more transactions. Now, that could be 5 more listings. It could be 5 buyers. It could be 3 and 2, 2 and 3. Doesn't matter. When we have a listing and we have traffic from them. So as I record this, one of my agents in Las Vegas this week had, I believe it was 180 people into their open house. When we say 183 people, we call it buying units. So just so you know, as you listen to my future podcast, if we have a family of 4 come in, mom, dad, 2 kids, we count that as 1 person. Because it's only 1 buying unit. So we refer to it as we had 183 buying units come in. Out of 183 people, don't you think we should be able to take and get 5 buyer transactions? And if they have a house to sell, which about half the buyers have a house to sell, that if we could pick up, say, 3 buyers and they had 3 homes to sell, they all had a home to sell, that's 6 transactions. And then out of that traffic, what other buyers can we pick up if they don't have a house to sell? So our goal as we train our agents is very simple. Your job as the open house agent is to take and turn this listing into 5 more transactions. That's why when we have an open house, we have material for neighbors coming in to see what the value of the houses are, what other homes are selling for, things of that nature, right? We anticipate that. We know neighbors are going to come in, and they're not coming in because they have nothing better to do. They're coming in to see what the value of the house is. What do you have right then and there where you could set them up on a monthly update or something along that lines? And so a lot of that 1 into 5 has to come into planning and being ready for anybody to come in there, whether it's a senior citizen, it's a veteran, it might be an FHA loan. What kind of materials do you have to help your buyer's agents that are working those open houses be able to take and do a better job at conversion? And then how much time do you spend with them on that conversion? And how much time do you spend role-playing with them? Because ultimately, here's the good news, folks. When you have listings, it allows you to take and build a team of agents because they're going to work your open houses. At least using the HomeBoss system the way that we do it, you cannot do all the open houses on your own listings. Just, it's not physically possible. And so what it does is it allows you now to take and go out and hire agents, take a 25% override on it, or whatever that number is, 25, 30%. But if you're going to take an override, then it's your responsibility to teach them how to convert that business. Because imagine if you could take, let's say, 25 listings. Let's be conservative. Let's say 20. And you could pick up 5 transactions from each one. You're going to have 100 closings this year off of 20 listings. The good news is if you build a business the way that I teach it, where you hire people that work the open house, you have to go out and get 20 listings, and they're going to go out and get the other 80 transactions and pay you an override on it. Isn't that a better way to build a business? So 1 in 5 for us is a big deal. Number 7, if you're doing the listings, you have a better track record that you could demonstrate. You have better statistics that you can give them, right? So a lot of questions come around, what's your list to sales price ratio? Listen, folks, if you list the property properly, you can have a very high list to sell price ratio, right? For us, it's about 120% roughly. We sell it for about 120% of what we listed it for. Now, there's a strategy that we have in that. Those are really good numbers. Don't get me wrong, but it is the home boss strategy. When you can sit down with somebody in their home and be able to walk through your statistics like that, you're going to get a lot more listings than are going to turn you away. Can we agree with that? But if you don't do that many transactions, you don't really have data and statistics. Or then maybe you're using your company data or you're using the market data. All agents average 97.4 list to sales price ratio. And then you go, well, mine is 98.8. And they go, great. How many transactions is that? So you're going to have better statistics to be able to share with people to be able to help them do that. Okay, number 8, more control of your income. Folks, when you're the listing agent, you set your compensation. Now, is it negotiable with the seller? Of course it is. But when you're worth 3 or 3.5 or even 4%, and you can demonstrate that you can sell their home for the most amount of money, you can dictate what that commission is. But if you're a buyer's agent, especially in this post-NAR commission settlement world, you're not in any control of your income. If the seller isn't offering any compensation and your buyer's either not willing or not able to write a check for your services, you're not in control of your income at all. And when you focus on working with buyers, you're going to spend a lot more time with them. It's going to be much harder to convince them of what your worth is. And then you're going to work much harder, which means you can't close as many transactions, right? It's just simple, pure math and physical time. You can't work with as many buyers as you can take listings, right? I know agents that take 25, 30 listings in a month. You cannot work with 25 or 30 buyers in a month. Just not how it works. And so at the end of the day, by being the listing agent, you're the one who sets your income. If a seller says, no, I'm only going to pay you 1%, I know agents who list at 1%. I don't recommend it because you have to work 3 times as hard to make the same amount of money, but you at least get to be in control of whether you take that listing or not. If they're just overpriced and that it won't sell for that, you're in control of being able to say, I can't invest my time, effort, and marketing dollars into promoting your home because I simply don't believe we can sell it. It puts you in control, right? You're the employer. Now you have control of your income. Number 9, from a marketing perspective, you're going to get a higher return on your time. Number 1, and you'll get a higher return on your money. So let's just say you were using Google Ads to get listing leads are actually cheaper than buyer leads in many cases. And what happens is in the buyer leads, you just get a much lower return on investment because more and more people just fill that out. You just paid for it, and maybe they're motivated, maybe they're not. Now, the seller lead may actually be a little bit more expensive. If you did Scottsdale's ridiculously expensive for listing leads, buyer leads are about the same expense. They're both really expensive. But at the end of the day, if somebody's calling me because they've seen my information about listing, chances are great they're going to list with me if I do my job correctly. But I might have to talk to 3, 4, 5, 6 different buyer leads from Google to be able to get one closing, right? And just folks, over the last really decade, the return on investment for buyer leads is just falling off the cliff, right? It just keeps getting lower and lower. Now, come July, when all these lead aggregators, the Zillows and everybody else, can't sell that lead to 10, 15, 20, 30 different realtors. The buyer or the person who filled in their information is going to be able to select who they want to talk to. Now, perhaps the ROI on buyer leads will improve a little bit, but I'm going to be interested to see what is going to happen with that and how it will impact the Zillows, right? Zillow's not going out of business in July. The other thing that I believe that'll happen is the buyer leads get more expensive. We're going to have to get back to old school marketing and prospecting methods like door knocking or direct mail or handwritten notes. Now, it was funny. I just heard an agent talk the other day about the listing agent on Ben Affleck's property in Pacific Palisades, California. And when they sold that, so they wanted to sell that house because it was his before and not with J-Lo. And so they just wanted to sell it and move to Florida and buy a bigger house. So the agent who listed the property and happened to be licensed in Florida also listed their $31 million, sold for $31 million property in Pacific Palisades and sold them a $63 million home in Florida. Do you know how he got the lead? He door knocked and Ben Affleck answered his door. Now, I'm shocked to hear that. I would think he'd have security that would answer his door, but literally he answered the door and this agent started talking to him and ended up getting almost over $90 million in production from door knocking, which is pretty cool. Remember, half the sellers are also buyers or half the buyers are also sellers, and it works the other way around. So we always need to be monitoring what our return on investment is on our advertising dollars. And then finally, number 10, which in my opinion is the most important. When you're a listing agent, you have a life. You're not running around on Sunday afternoon showing houses and people call you up. You're in the middle of watching whatever, a football game or whatever it is on a Sunday afternoon with your family, or you went to the movie and they're like, hey, could we go see this $1 million house? Well, you're going to go show it to them, right? You just don't have the lifestyle that a listing agent has, right? You can do listing appointments Monday through Saturday, take Sunday off. If contracts come in, guess what, guys? You usually have 24 hours to give them an answer. You don't necessarily have to address it. And let's be honest, if you do, you forward the contract to the seller, you find out what they think, and it takes what to write up a counteroffer? 10 minutes? So even if you do get disturbed as a listing agent, it's a much quicker resolution. And so at the end of the day, it gives you a lifestyle. You also, your cash flow is going to be better because you don't need to spend as much money marketing to get listings as you do to get buyers. So your cash flow is better, your time is better. And guys, isn't that really why we got into real estate? Hey, we wanted to make a really good living, but we also thought, I'm my own boss. Now today I'm telling you're really not your own boss if you're a buyer's agent. You really work for the listing agent, your buyer. But by being a listing agent, you have your own business. You're in control of how much you make. You're in control of when you work. And you have consistent cash flow. Isn't that the lifestyle that we all wanted? It's why I got into it. And so those are the real reasons that it's critical, in my opinion, to be the listing agent. It doesn't mean you'll never work with a buyer, and it doesn't mean we don't want to work with buyers. I just prefer to have somebody else work with them and pay me a referral fee. Whatever you choose to do is totally up to you. But when you're the listing agent, folks, you're in control of your life and your cash flow. And to me, those are two really, really big things. So that's it for this week. I hope that helps. Hope I give you some things to think about. And remember, if you list, you last. And we'll talk to you next week. Have a great one.